Okay, this interview is being recorded on May 27th in Pino's, which is a restaurant owned by Jerry Casale. He is the subject of the interview. He knows that the interview will be going up to Cooperstown as the property of the Hall of Fame, and that the Society for American Baseball Research is conducting the interview. My name is Evelyn Begley, and the subject is Jerry Casale. How are you, Jerry?
Nice to have you here.
And today's the day Roger Clemens is going to serve his 300th win. You were a pitcher for the Red Sox. How did that feel?
Well, I never got up to 20, but I can just imagine what it feels like to be going for 300.
Yes.
That's quite a feat.
Now, tell me what it was like growing up in Brooklyn.
Well, I've grown up in the 40s, and it was kind of rough, you know, poor area. So I got to play for my church, St. Francis Xavier, and that's how I got started into baseball. The priest, Father Keene, wanted us off the street, so we ended up doing a lot of things for the church.
What was your father's occupation?
My father died. He owned a grocery store, and he died very young at 49, and my mother died soon after. So I was raised by two sisters.
And what did they think about your baseball playing?
Well, they really didn't know too much about back in those days in the early 50s, and baseball, that was ridiculous. You should have gone out and got a job. But the thing is, when they seen some scouts come into the house asking, inquiring, then I think they got more interested in giving this kid a chance to do what he likes to do the most, baseball.
Do you remember who signed you? Which scout signed you?
Same scout that signed Carl Yastrzemski, signed me. It's a guy named Bots Nicola, a guy from out in Long Island, who was no longer with us either.
And do you remember the date that you entered the big leagues?
Oh, 1958, I come out of the Army for the last month of September, and I was able to join the club for the last 30 days of the 58 season.
Right, yes. Right. Okay, because the websites have you listed as September 27th as your debut date.
Was it?
Yes.
I honestly,
yes, your memory is accurate. September, yeah. The late September,
yeah,
of that year.
Yeah.
Do you remember? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I came in for a couple of innings against Detroit and pitched a little relief against Harvey Keene, which I struck out, which was he was a heck of a ball player back then, good hitter.
Yes.
And so that was my first experience in the big leagues, coming in as a relief pitcher for an inning or two.
Do you remember much of the minor leagues?
All of it.
Tell us some stories.
The minor leagues. It was the greatest part of my baseball career, to be honest with you. It was the most fun. Being with a bunch of kids 18, 19 years old, and going here and going there and seeing places, you know, coming from a very poor area of Brooklyn, and then all of a sudden starting to see all these beautiful places of spring training in Florida and then out to California. Well, I was so dumb when I left here, when I first started, that the Red Sox said to me, Casale, we're sending you out to San Jose. I says, yeah? No way, I'm not leaving this country. I didn't know where San Jose was. I thought it was maybe in Puerto Rico with San Juan and San Tercey. So I ended up beginning my career in San Jose at the age of 18. And then the following year I was with Greensboro and Roanoke. I wasn't too good those first 2 years. But then I started to get into it. My third year was up in Albany in the Eastern League. And then I went on to AAA with Louisville. Had a couple of good years there between Albany and Louisville. I won 19 games, 17 games. And then they sent me out to San Francisco, which was still a minor league team in those days, the San Francisco Seals. And I won 19 games out there, too. And then I went in the Army and came out and I joined the Red Sox.
Wow, so much at such a young age.
Yeah, well, not to mention that I threw in a year in Mexico, a little bit in Puerto Rico, and one season in Venezuela before I really got started in the big leagues.
So you went from Brooklyn to so many different countries and states.
Yeah, I pitched while I was in the Army for the 2 years.
Oh,
I was in Europe. I pitched in Holland and Denmark and all these different places in Europe too.
How did the army? How did the people react? Did you have an audience? Did people?
Yeah.
And how did they react?
The army bases, you know, they have the newspaper that comes out, and they know when there's a kid, there's somebody that's been getting a lot of publicity, like I was getting publicity, getting ready to go with the Red Sox, and so the Stars and Stripes was the newspaper, so they would write it all up, and we'd have a tremendous amount of both the American guys, but also we would get the German people coming to see the baseball games too, which, and they enjoyed it. It was fun. It was fun pitching in Europe.
And when you were pitching, were you the star for the Army team?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't go to your head?
Oh, no.
Did you know at that...
I was the manager, too.
You were. So you
were everything.
Managerial experience.
Yeah. It was a lot better than hanging around in the tanks all the time. That's the unit I was with, the tank division. But playing baseball and sports was a lot better than being in that.
When you eventually did go up to the Red Sox, did you share your Army experiences with Ted Williams?
We spoke about it. Yeah,
did you?
We spoke about it.
He
was in during a wartime, and I was there for peacetime. So.
Right.
But it was interesting listening to everything he had to say about flying there and being with John Glenn and all that. So it was nice. You know, everything he spoke, you had to listen to him. He was so good to listen to.
And he didn't hate you because you were a pitcher?
No. Yeah, he did. I think he hated him other pitcher, not on the guys on his side.
Oh, okay.
I was fortunate enough. I locked it next to him for the 2 years that I was there. And that was an experience in itself. Because after every game, you couldn't get to your locker with all this, with all the riders and all the people around.
Wow.
So it was an experience. And listening to him, having little arguments here and there with some of the reporters. He was gruff, but he was good.
Mm-hmm.
He was good to me anyway.
Yeah. And you had a very good year, an exceptionally good year, while you were in the Red Sox. One year, you had a record of... 13-8.
Yeah, I had a good first year with them. I was the rookie of the year for the Red Sox in 1989.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And it was just unfortunate. The following season, I opened up the season beating the Yankees the first two games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then after about the fifth or sixth game, my arm, I went into terrible pain with bursitis.
Mm.
And that was the beginning of the end for me. I never was able to regain the stuff that I had when I got to the big leagues. You know, curveball wasn't good, and I was afraid to really throw the ball hard. And it was like I said, the beginning of the end.
Wow. And what about the other pitchers? Did they also have arm problems?
Oh, yeah. There's guys that, you know, through the course of the season, somebody's coming down injured here. My roommate took over for me, a good pitcher named Mambo Cat, Bill Mambo Cat.
Mm-hmm.
Good pitcher, but he's a good pitcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you in touch with any of these former teammates?
I have the restaurant here. I get to see some of the fellas mm-hmm. when they come into New York,
mm-hmm.
like Dick Raddatz, Mal Zone.
Mm-hmm.
I get to see some of the guys when they come to eat with me when they come down to New York. Or else, every year I go to this big bat dinner at the Marriott,
right.
And there's usually about 150 ex-ball players
right.
there, so I get to see some of the guys, like especially guys like Johnny Pesky
mm-hmm.
and Jimmy Williams, but I mean managers, McNamara, Joe Morgan,
right.
I get to see the fellas up in these baseball affairs,
yeah.
which I go to this bat dinner because it helps the players that weren't fortunate enough to come along these days, and they're down, some of them down, now there's some wonderful stories and the wonderful things that this organization does, that baseball assistance team.
Yeah. Tell me more of the minor league stories, such as in Venezuela and Mexico, and some of those exotic countries you visited. They were exotic in the 1950s.
God, I can't imagine Mexico being exotic anytime. I was there in 1954,
mm-hmm.
and I made a promise to God that if he let me live through it, I would never, ever have anything to do no more with eating Mexican food.
Montezuma's revenge?
Nothing. It was... it was, we had a lot of fun, but it was a tough experience. I mean, traveling through the night and some of these places, like, you know, the roads were so small and you couldn't get, they had to put a bus on a barge to get across the river and then come back for the team. They have rainstorms down there. I don't know how they play baseball. I don't know.
Wow. But did they have a huge attendance there?
Yeah, there was
a popular sport.
Well, we played in a little place called Nogales. It was a small place.
Okay.
And so, you know, that was the only form of entertainment in the small little town.
Right.
And I went there to work on control. I was having, like I said, the first couple of years, I was having a lot of problems with getting my motion nice and smooth and getting the ball over the plate. That's the reason I went. But the other place I think I liked a little bit was Puerto Rico. The other place, not for me.
Nothing like home.
No.
No place like home.
I'm so happy to be here. No place else.
And did you have a favorite ballpark when you came back to the States?
To pitch in?
Yes.
Well, I like pitching in Comiskey Park back in those days. The old Comiskey Park was spacious. They sent a lot of fly balls, deep fly balls, and in Fenway Park it was kind of rough. It was a small place. And in Chicago or even New York, here in the Yankee Stadium, they hit the ball a mile and somebody's catching it. So it's much nicer pitching in a place like that. Whatever advantage you can get, you have to have take.
Yeah. What about hitting? Did you enjoy hitting?
I loved hitting. I just loved hitting. And the first game I pitched in the big leagues, I hit a three-run homer, and I helped win my own game, and that was nice. I ended up hitting three home runs that year, and it was a thrill. The second home run I hit was off Early Wynn, who's a Hall of Fame pitcher, and I was fortunate enough. I hit one off of him in the same inning. Ted Williams hit one too, so it was a lot of fun. Teddy gave me a little helped me out by telling me what to look for, this, that, the other thing. And when I hit the home run, I came to the dugout. He was the first one to say to me, "Nice going, Bush." He called Bush, as in Bush League. Yeah, he's good. He was good. He liked me. I liked him too. So. My kind of guy.
Yeah, everybody seems to say that about Ted Williams.
Yes, acolytes. My kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of the people, not your kind of guys, and what were some of the major league ballparks you would rather not pitch in?
Well, Wrigley Field in Los Angeles would have been the number one worst place in the world to pitch.
Tiny park?
Oh my God, it was a bandbox. It was just ridiculous. I mean, well, guys swing late and hit no runs. I mean, it was terrible, terrible place to pitch. Fenway Park is a tough place to pitch. I love Fenway Park. I love the ballpark. I love the oldness about it and all that, but it's a very tough place to pitch. And like I said, Yankee Stadium, Comiskey Park, Cleveland back in those days had a big ballpark. So they were nice places to pitch. You know, it was a legitimate thing. If a guy hit a home run, he hit a home run. And he deserved it. You know, the first game I lost in 1960, first game I lost in 59, I had Baltimore beaten. Gus Triantos hit a high fly ball to left field, and I was walking off the mound. There were three guys on base. Ted Williams going back, the wind blew the ball into the stands, and I lost the game 5-2. So there's a lot of things, you know. If you look at the box score, it looks like you got beat pretty bad, but there's a lot of things you got to be there to witness.
That's right.
Exactly what goes on in some of these ballparks.
Yeah.
Like I would imagine Wrigley Field be the same way. A lot of artificial home runs.
Right. The wind blows out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or gets stuck in the
some
ivy.
Tough places to pitch. And I would say Comiskey, Wrigley Field and that place in Los Angeles where the Angels first started.
Yes.
I was with them when they first started. That was a terrible place to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they used to have the home run derby in that ballpark.
That's right,
television.
On TV,
so,
that's
yeah,
right.
So
yes,
that was a very easy place to hit home runs. Oh,
right.
God, it was so easy to hit home runs there.
Yeah.
And most of the clubs used to love to come in to play there, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Up on their, mm-hmm. on their averages or their, mm-hmm. whatever they...
Like what Denver is today.
Yes. Well, in Denver, and I pitched in Denver. When they sent me down back to the minor leagues and I pitched a few months for Denver, the hard part about Denver is you can't seem to throw a good breaking ball.
Oh.
The ball just does not break good.
Mm.
So it gives the advantage to that batter. And then the air is so light, the ball just keeps mm-hmm. carries right out of there. So Denver was, it was a tougher place to pitch in than in Wrigley Field in Los Angeles,
right.
because the air was so light.
Sure.
So I seen balls hit out of the air, my God.
You're still going.
Oh, God, yes. I remember one day I pitched against the Yankee AAA team, and they had a guy, Marvelous Marv, thrown there.
Mm-hmm.
He hit a ball off of me that if the stands weren't out there like 500 feet away, they would have just kept right on going. It was just a tremendous home run. I marveled at it. I couldn't believe a guy could hit a ball that far. But thank God we won the game, so I didn't care.
Did you have any cousins, people that just loved to face you, people you couldn't stand at the plate?
Yeah, when I was in the minor leagues, a guy, Gene Mark, who was amazing,
mm-hmm.
he hit me good. I don't know why. I don't think he was that good of a hitter, but he hit me very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yogi Berra hit me very good.
Mm-hmm.
And certain people, they were very hard. Like in the minor leagues, AAA again, Mazeroski, who went on to become a heck of a player with Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Bill was a good hitter against me. He hit the heck out of me.
Do some of the paisans still remember you, like Yogi and Nicky Testa? Right, Rizzuto,
yeah. Yeah, I see. Uh-huh. Like I say, I see these people at these affairs.
Okay.
Some of the guys come and see me, like, who's the paisans that come and see me? I don't even know right now, but... Kitty would pick up with some of the guys, but I see like...
There's a nice connection,
yeah.
Italian connection
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
good. Sure.
And when you were growing up, did you have Italian heroes like DiMaggio?
Sure.
You did,
Branko,
yeah.
was my idol, Ralph.
Oh.
Ralph was my idol.
Right.
And, of course, I never was a Yankee fan.
Mm-hmm.
So...
A lot of people aren't.
My idols came out of Brooklyn.
Okay.
When I grew up, I was in love with the Brooklyn Dodgers, and I loved...
You like Ferrillo?
Carl Ferrillo,
yeah.
Yes. I loved Ferrillo, Campanella, and that was my love, that team.
Yeah.
So we were very, very anti-Yankee.
And when you pitched for the Red Sox, you were anti-Yankee.
Very, very anti-Yankee. But I was fortunate. I beat him three times. In the short career that I had there, I beat him three times. I loved that challenge of facing them. They were a magnificent team.
Mm.
You know, they just had no weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, even the bad boy was scary. And everybody was good-looking hitter. Everybody.
How did your family, your sisters, how did they react once you became a major league player?
My brother Lou, too,
and your
they
brother.
Felt very proud. They were
good.
Proud. Oh, God.
Good.
They loved it. They loved it all, and the attention I was getting, and then a lot of write-ups with my sister, giving credits to my sisters and my brother.
Mm. You're still getting write-ups. The New York Times did a front-page story on you.
I don't know why, but they did this because of the Red Sox-Yankee series.
Right.
They wanted to get something in there.
Right.
And I'll tell you the truth, I haven't even read the article yet.
Oh.
I don't know too much of what they wrote. And I hope they gave Pino's a plug. That's all I care.
Oh, yes, they do. Because the article is about places in New York City where a Red Sox fan can eat and feel comfortable.
Yes.
And after this interview, I did say May 27. Today is May 26th. I'll videotape the restaurant itself. And that could also help business, we hope.
We could use all the help we can get these days.
In New York, especially.
Well, since 9/11, boy, it's been kind of really rough.
That's right.
And we have excellent food here.
Yes, I've eaten here several times and recommended it.
A lot of guys, Bobby Mercer's here every time.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I get the old times in, guys like Orlando Cepeda, Cookie Rojas.
Mm-hmm.
I get all the older guys in, that guys that I know from many years ago. But the present-day players, we don't get to see too much.
No.
I don't know where they go. And
Maybe they have room service. They could afford, you know, private restaurants.
I'm sure they can buy a restaurant every town. They could own their own restaurant. 10 million, 15 million, 100 million. What the heck? Give them everything they want.
How do you feel about today's salaries and the union strides that have been made? Is there resentment or congratulations?
I only resent. No, I don't really care. I mean, everything is so out of whack. I mean, it's ridiculous. They, even here, these people, they just keep talking about money, money. And, I'm only bitter about one thing. I missed my pension by about 30 days, and these people that are now the heads of all this stuff, they can't find it in themselves to go back a little bit and help guys out. Like, man, there's more people than me. I'm not feeling sorry for myself, but when I see them throwing money all over the place, they got money overflowing, and there's not many of us that are still left that, you know, come along where we just missed. We just missed the pension by 30 days, 50 days, 70 days. At that time, you had to spend 4 years in the big leagues. And unfortunately, I didn't make the 4 years, but I just missed my 30, 40 days. And we've had people bringing this up, but the present day players or whoever's in charge keeps turning it all down. And it would be nice if they would do something, because today they are, from day one, they're on a pension. They spend
right,
a day in the
big league.
So it would be nice, not only for me, but for a lot of guys that are hurting, that could use some help.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know who to reach out to. Nobody seems to really care. So all they care is about next year's contract.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of $8 million, they want $12 million. And that's the thing, you know, when you look at all this, I look at that in disgust. I'm like, come on, guys, play the game. Play the game. Talk the game. Let's get into it. And I don't see that today. Like, I don't know. I was so in love with the game and playing that I never knew when there was a payday. Not that I ever made a lot of money. The most I ever made was $12,500. So, you know, I still get fan mail and things like that. I know when young people are writing in, they're saying, what was your biggest thrill in the big leagues, Jerry? And not to sound corny, but to me the biggest thrill was the day I put on that uniform. For 15 years I dreamt of pitching in the major leagues. And that when I got there at 25 years old, I enjoyed just putting on that uniform and being next to Ted Williams and some of my idols like Jackie Jensen and Malzahn, some real good people, real good people, and they were wonderful. It was every bit as nice as I thought it would be playing in the big leagues.
Even the managers, you had good managers, no problems with pitching coaches or...
I would be lying to you to say they had no problems with managers.
Okay.
They had a manager up there for many years, and I don't know why.
You can be honest.
His name was Pinky Higgins.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was a real jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And he did me some wrong, but I don't think I'd like to discuss that with you.
Okay.
He's the reason I lost my pension. I missed my pension. Him and Joe Cronin and all those people. They did some bad things to me, and that's the resentment. I don't think we should talk about how they made me miss my pension, because I don't think people want to hear about bad stuff.
Okay.
Let's not put the bad stuff.
Okay, all right.
You don't want to hear about that, what they've done to me. I don't think this is what this interview was supposed to be about, is it?
It's supposed to be about anything you want it to be on tape. Anything. Good, bad, neutral. It doesn't matter. I've interviewed players who have complained about the managers, the pitching coaches, people who ruined their arms and they couldn't get back into the majors because of that.
Well, see, in 1955, it was my fourth year in the minors. I was on AAA, Louisville. I just won 17 games the year before, and I was with Louisville in the AAA, a very good AAA league, and I won 19 games. I was one of the outstanding prospects in the country.
Mm-hmm.
19 games, struck out over 200 people.
Wow.
Finished 18 games, hit 3, 4, 5 home runs, I don't remember. I would say everything. the Red Sox took me spring training in 56 with all kinds of things saying that I was going to be their number three starter, their fourth starter. I was getting a lot of publicity, and when I got there, I got a letter from the draft board. They said they were going to take me in service, so I bring the letter to the big boss. Right away, they called a meeting. All these big shots there, Joe Prohman, Higgins, the manager, and they wrote this beautiful letter back asking the draft board, if, the draft people, if they would defer me until the end of the season, so I can get on with my big league career, and how it would help me. Of course, going in the army, would, my pension would be counted. So they wrote this gorgeous letter, and also they wrote down I was an orphan kid, and the letter was so sad I was even crying. So they said, they sent this letter out, and then I opened up the spring training. I could still see the headlines, Cassell facing Drysdale, opening game Miami. I opened up against them, I looked terrific. A week later, we shut out the Yankees 2-0, I looked terrific again, headlines, you know, young phenom or whatever, all these nice things they were saying about me. Then they upped me to 5-6 innings against the Washington team. We beat them again. I looked tremendous in the whole three games. I struck out like about 12, 15 guys and gave up one run, I think two runs. That's why I really looked great. So then I get back to Sarasota, and there's a letter from the draft board. I said, I guess I got to go in. But I opened it up, and they said, dear Mr. Cassell, we're deferring you to the end of the season so you can get on with your big league career. Well, you know how happy I felt? I'm going to get my shot now, and this and that. Oh, I was so happy. I gave the letter to someone, and I worked out that day. After the workout, I said, Jerry, the manager wants to see you, Pinky Higgins. He said, he's going to finally tell me that I made the team, you know, I'm going to be with the team. Because I was really sad, and I don't mean to be blowing smoke and boasting about myself, but I was top-notch pitcher down there. I go into the office, and he's already been, had a few drinks, and he was a big-time drinker, this guy Higgins. And later on, he killed somebody in the car, drunk and driving, and he later died in jail. But so I go in the office, I say, Piggy, Jerry Cassell. He says, Cassell, we're sending you back to the minor leagues. He says, you said, what are you talking about? I thought he thought I was talking to somebody else. I said, no, Jerry Cassell, Pinky. Cassell, you got to go back to the minors. I says, Pinky, you know where you can go. So I'm going back to New York. I'm going to the Army. What the heck? I'm going to go back to the minor leagues for. I just won 19 games in the best AAA league in the country. And here I was pitching tremendous in spring training. So as I'm walking out of the ballpark, who comes? Joe Cronin, the guy that helped that write that beautiful, beautiful letter, how much he cared for me and how much I was going to be able to help the team, and I'm an orphan and all this thing. He says, Cassell, what the hell is the matter with you? I said, Joe, what's the matter with me? I said, my heart is throbbing right now. My stomach feels like it's falling out. Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this, Joe? And that beautiful letter, did I do something bad here or what? He said, no, you were terrific at this and that. I said, Joe, I got to go in the Army at the end of the season. You want to send me back to the minor leagues? Why are you doing this? He says, I'm going to pay you a big league salary. He says, Joe, this is not about a big league salary. Why are you doing this? Why are you sending me back? He says, you don't understand. I says, well, then you make me understand. He said, this is our first year in San Francisco, out in Coastline. I says, yeah, so what does that mean? It's still AAA. He says, they got a big Italian population out there. I says, you've got to be kidding me, Joe. You've got to be kidding me. I says, are the Italians different in Boston than they are in San Francisco? I says, you can't be doing that, Joe. You're sending me out there because of the Italians. So he says, if you don't go out there. Yeah, I said, let me go and go in the Army, get it over with. What am I going to accomplish? I just won 19 games. What am I going to do in AAA? It'd be the same thing. I said, gee, at least let me get my brains knocked in before you send me out. No, do something, but don't let me go out there after I pitched tremendous last year, now I pitched tremendous in spring training. Larry Knapp, an umpire, is telling Higgins, this kid has got everything, and you want to send me back out because I'm Italian, I got to go out there. So sure as heck, the first cut was me. First cut, not even a second cut. I said, you got Dave Sisler, just come out of the Army, never played higher than Class A ball. You're going to keep him? I just come out of AAA. This guy's in Class A ball. Dave Sisler. Well, you know, his relative, George Sisler and Dick Sisler, you know, all the Hall of Fame people. I was the first one, second cut with me with Malzone. Third was Espromonte. Our first baseman out there was Larry DiPippo. We had Espromonte, DiPippo, Torme, Toramina, Bob DiPietro. I thought it was a pitcher for the Italian team. So our manager was there, it was Eddie Juice, the guy that played shortstop for the A's for a lot of years. He said to me, Jerry, I know how you feel. Please, pitch for me, and I'll do everything I can to get you back there. I said, Eddie, why are we in a situation where you gotta... First of all, I don't understand what I'm doing back here, Triple A. I said, but when you give me the ball, I go out there and I pitch. I don't dog it. I pitch the people in Boston, write newspapers, I get letters. What's Casale doing in Captain San Francisco? We need pitching in Boston. And the first 12 games I pitched, I was 10 wins and one loss. They wouldn't take me back. And as the season went on, we had a terrible season there. Where we ended up close to 30 games out of first place. They wouldn't even take me back for the last 30 days. 30 days, that's all they had to take me back. And then those 2 years in the Army would have counted for me. And as fate would have it, they didn't take me back. I come out of the Army and I missed my pension, my 30 days. See, so that's the bitterness that I carry with me.
That's understandable.
I was Italian and I had to go out there because I was Italian. Well, I thought, I couldn't say too much to Joe Cronin, like, you know, it sounds like a case of prejudice to me.
Yeah.
And Malzone, the year before, was with me, hit 314. The Red Sox didn't even have a third baseman. They sent him out. And it was just terrible. And I couldn't believe that they would do something like this. And that's, you know, the rules are the rules. 4 years is fine. But these guys today, they break all kinds of rules. I mean, so what is the big difference? They got all kinds of billions and millions and zillions of dollars to give some of us guys a minimum of something to help us out. I'm going to be 70 years old soon. I'm still in this restaurant because I'm actually living off of my Social Security check, which is like $1,400 a month. Which is just barely enough to pay my rent. So that's the bitterness. But I forget that bitterness when I walk into the restaurant. I wanna feel good, and I like being with people.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that we keep driving and hoping that, well, maybe something good will come along someplace along the line.
Yeah.
I'm running out of time. And I don't know, I can almost feel that dirt hitting my face already, so I gotta be careful.
Miami was always the spring training?
No, Sarasota was.
Sarasota, okay.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And how was the instruction you got there? Was it...
We had a great coach, a guy named Dave Boo Ferris, a wonderful guy. And then Sal Magley was my other pitching coach.
Mm.
Wonderful. The coaches were fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the manager,
right,
Pinky Higgins, was not a good person, and neither was Joe Cronin and Yorkie and all those people that were associated by sending me.
That's right.
They should not rest for some of the dirty things.
That's right.
And that was a dirty thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And like I tell you, they didn't even have a pitching staff back then. And, you know, if I was shown bad, okay, send me back. But I mean, you win 19 games. today, if a guy wins 9 games, they shoot him to the big leagues, and...
Pension guaranteed.
Oh, gosh. And that's the things that, make you a little unhappy sometimes, you know?
Who was a good influence, somebody who influenced you more than anyone in baseball?
Johnny Murphy, he was one of the nicer guys. Mm. That used to be, he used to be an ex-relief pitcher for the Yankees.
Uh-huh.
And he was our farm director. He was really, he helped me a tremendous amount.
Encouragement?
Yes.
Mechanic?
Yes, through the early days when I first started to go, when I first went away to play ball, Johnny was, you know, he kept the best. And he tried to help me in my follow through, my curve, my this and that, my habits. My eating habits, my going out habits. Maybe a letter once in a while, I'd be better bed down. And, you know, he'd jump on me here and there. Mm. He was good. Johnny Murphy was good.
Yeah.
And they had some nice people there, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about those two people in particular, Peaky Higgins and Joe Cronin.
Mm-hmm.
They were not the people. They were not the nice people. Maybe some people think they were.
No. I heard what you heard, too, about them.
I don't know. It's sad. It's sad because I made a lot of mistakes in my lifetime afterwards. I was desperate to come out of the game. I was missed my pension, got nothing, had to go to work for $900 a week. It was tough. We had a tough time.
What were some of the non-baseball jobs that you had? You worked in the off-season?
Yeah, the off-season.
Like doing what? Some of the jobs.
I worked in a candy plant once a year, off-season.
Mm-hmm.
I had to quit the job. I used to eat too much. I used to get too fat. Then I used to work helping out in my brother's butcher store.
Uh-huh.
Mostly that.
Okay.
In the butcher store, help out a little bit over there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. My family mostly were in the butcher business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did your teammates ever contact you? Were you in touch with anybody during the off season?
Christmas cards.
Oh, okay.
We still get some from Mount Zone.
Right.
But the Red Sox team that I play with, most of the players are dead.
Oh, now, yes.
Yeah, well,
now they are.
Sammy White, catcher, Vic Wirtz, Pete Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
Jackie Jensen, Ted Williams, Gary Geiger. Luke Clinton, Leo Kiley, Mike Fournier, there's a lot of guys are dead.
Yeah.
Sammy White.
Were any of them considered flaky or, you know, weird
characters?
Well,
when I joined the team, we had a character.
Oh, really?
Jimmy Pearsall.
Oh.
He was a little bit off the walls.
Oh, yes. Give us a few examples.
I remember Jimmy running behind hiding behind the poles in Yankee Stadium. I thought he was funny, but I went out with him a couple of times. He's a very funny guy. Really nuts.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, a likable guy, but Jimmy was a nice fella. But he was rough. He was
very intense.
You never know what the heck he was going to come out saying or doing.
Uh-huh.
But I best not talk about him. Jimmy's still around. He's alive.
Yeah, I think he does some of the Cubs camps.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Do you ever do any of those instructional camps that people like to go to?
No, once in a while I try to help out locally with, like, young leagues, young kids in Staten Island where I used to live.
Oh, right.
And then maybe I go see somebody here and there, maybe.
Okay.
Take a look at some guy wants me to see how his kid is doing. I take a peek at him. If I think anybody's got any kind of good potential, then I would get in touch with maybe a guy like Mal Zone, who's now in the front office up there in Boston. You know, I go watch the kids, and if I can be of a little help here and there once in a while, I give a little lecture to the team here and there. We'll talk. You know, somebody will bring someone here to the restaurant, and I'm in them giving a clinic in the restaurant.
Yeah. Oh boy, wow.
Yeah.
Did you ever get tired of traveling? You've been so many places, both hemispheres. No.
I think that was wonderful, especially in a marriage. I think it's wonderful.
Okay.
We used to go away for a week, 10 days. I think that was great. You know, get away from each other here and there. You know, the pressure will build up in a marriage here and there.
How did you meet Marge?
Well, on a blind date.
Oh.
A friend of mine met on a blind date.
Uh-huh.
And we've been married for 43 years now.
But congratulations.
I know close to 5 more years before that.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually broke off with her a couple of times.
And
I just didn't want to get tied down to nothing. Baseball was my first marriage.
Sure.
And I didn't want no woman to get in my way.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else. No distractions.
Right, right.
You know how you women can be distracting. In fact, you're still distracting to me today.
Okay. Now, who did you room with while you were traveling on the road?
Well, the first guy I roomed with with the Red Sox was Ike DeLock, who was a pitcher with the Red Sox for 12 years. But after one night rooming with him, I went to the secretary. I said, "You get me away from him."
One night. What happened?
I didn't sleep the whole night. He snored. I mean, to beat the band. And I said, no way, I'm going to stay there. And Ike is my dearest friend. And he lives in Naples, Florida today, but he is just a great guy. But no way could I sleep in that room with him. So I ended up with a few different guys. And then Mambo Cat was my last roommate that I had with the Red Sox. He went on to be a good pitcher.
Yes.
Billy was a good pitcher.
Yeah. Did you have any superstitions? A lot of pitchers do.
Well,
certain things, rituals they follow. That wasn't for you? Give me the ball and I'll do my best?
Well, you used to have certain ways to eat. Certain days to eat certain things when you're pitching.
Yeah.
And that maybe having a steak at 2 in the afternoon gave me, in my mind, all the strength that I ever needed.
Good.
And I've had some luck with a certain sweatshirt. That's the shirt I would be wearing. And not clean. I didn't want it clean.
Mm-hmm.
Some things like that.
Yes,
and work off a certain way off the mound and don't change your way.
Okay.
So
you always wore number 19, except one season you wore number 40.
Yeah, that was with the Angels.
Yes. And why, somebody chose 19 first?
I honestly don't know. Maybe I wanted to change, get something different. Maybe change my luck. But I was pitching at half what I was capable of, what I used to be able to pitch. My arm was still hurting me. And I was not the pitcher no more when I went there to the Angels. But I did one thing when I got to the Angels. I think I got into the Hall of Fame. I believe I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because my first game I pitched was against the Red Sox. And a guy named Carl Yastrzemski hit his first home run off me in the major leagues.
Wow.
So I'm sure that Carl in the Hall of Fame with my name, all the lenders they hit the home runs off of, I was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And then that same year, I gave up Roger Maris's 24th home run when he hit his 61 home run. So I think I made the Hall of Fame.
I think so, too. What is the tape that you play here in the restaurant with Rizzuto as the voiceover?
Oh, God. I think I've hit the most home runs in the history of baseball. I must have hit 50, 60,000. My brother taped the moment of a game when we were playing the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the mural I have on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I had beaten everybody in the league but the Yankees.
Wow.
So, and it was in September, last time we're going to face them. And my brother taped this game. And in that game, I hit a tremendous home run off of Bob Turley.
Mm.
And I also won the game 7-1. So it was a great day for me, beating the Yankees and beating everybody in the league as a rookie. You know, that's quite an honor.
Oh, yeah.
And hitting three home runs. It was pretty nice.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you have those memories.
Yeah, we have good memories.
Good.
And I still feel the ball leaving the bat as I play it in here.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was fun.
So if you knew your arm was declining, how did you adjust to civilian life?
Very, very difficult.
Still?
Maybe 10, 15 years later, I was starting to come back to reality, but I bought this place from this fella in Pino, and I tried to get away from everybody and not put my name there.
Oh.
Because everybody would come in a restaurant, or, when they did find out that I used to pitch in the big leagues, it would be the same thing. Jerry, what happened? What happened? And then bring back all these terrible moments that I couldn't finish my career. I couldn't finish the way I wanted to play in the big leagues. And it would bring back sore spots for me. And I always, I relived it for years, what would have been or what could have been.
What year did you buy the restaurant?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
Because it sounds like for a long time. Yeah,
30 years ago.
Yeah. For a long time.
Can you carry that with you all the time? It never leaves you. Yeah. It stays with you forever.
Adjective.
What could have been or what I knew I was capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
With so many pitches in everybody's arm, and mine, my arm gave way. And that's the way it was.
Today you would have Tommy John surgery.
What?
Today you would have Tommy John
back
surgery.
Back then they just pushed you on the side. And that was the way it was back then.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even try to give you, bring you to a doctor, nothing. Push you on the side. It's a joke. It's a joke.
Would you say today's game is better than the era you played in?
Or they're taken care of tremendously today, but I don't like today's baseball.
The DH,
I don't like DH.
Uh-huh.
I don't like all this expansion. I don't like, I just don't think the players love the game the way they used to love the game. That's the way I feel, you know, and I'm not bitter, and I don't live in the past. I don't mean to sound that way, but you read the paper, it seemed to guys seem to always be talking about money, and then I... Push you on the side. It's a joke. It's a joke.
Would you say today's game is better than the era you played in? Or how people are taken care of?
Oh, they're taken care of tremendously today, but I don't like today's baseball.
The DH?
I don't like DH. I don't like all this expansion. I don't I think the players love the game the way they used to love the game. That's the way I feel, you know, and I'm not bitter, and I don't live in the past. I don't mean to sound that way. But you read the paper, you see guys seem to always be talking about money. God, I never knew there was a payday, I'll be honest with you. And back in our day, it was a lot different than it is today. These fellas, to me, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're probably more talented than we were in our day. But the game is lousy. To me, they don't know how to bite. They don't know how to hit behind a runner. They won't give themselves up. The ballparks are all smaller now. I think it's all meant for scoring a lot of runs. And the mound is lower. Bats, I'm sure, are different. It's livelier. And it's a different, it's altogether different. And they don't play the nice way, the way I would like to see it play. But then again, people like stuff today.
Supposedly. That's what we keep being told, that we like all this.
Yeah, but then you see teams that are so horrible, really horrible. And how do you keep interested to it? I don't know. I mean, how do the Yankees play in a team like Tampa Bay? Can you be interested in it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of Tampa Bay's now.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at teams like Detroit, it's got to be so bad. I don't know. The rivalries don't seem to be there anymore the way they used to be.
Yeah.
Those great pitching matchups are not there. A Koufax facing a Marichal or a Gibson facing Drysdale and things like that. And those great matchups, you don't seem to see that anymore. And when you do see them, like say today, last week or whatever, Roger Clemens is pitching against Pedro Martinez. Wow, my God, that's headlines.
Mm-hmm.
But this we used to see a lot of back in the old days. And today you see a guy pitching, he's had half a year in the minor leagues, or guys don't even belong in the major leagues, and they're getting their experience in the big leagues. And these guys, I think the difference really is that there is no more good minor leagues. There isn't a minor league. And I guess it's because everything is so expensive that they got to either rush these guys there or they can't have the teams like they did when we were there. You had to go from one level to another level, and they don't have that anymore. They think that a kid playing in college has got to get an experience. I don't believe that. I don't believe the college is the experience that a future major league player needs.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got to go and put his nose in the dirt and get homesick and get this and that and keep that drive to want to be there. I think if these guys are guaranteed that they're going to be there no matter what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different game, and I don't like the way they play the game. You know, they're tremendous athletes, there's no doubt about it. They can run like hell. They're very good athletes. But 30-something teams, and they all can't be Major League Baseball teams. They can't be.
What would be the one thing you would change? If you could change one thing about today's baseball, the game or the environment or...
The mentality of their thinking of baseball. Baseball is beautiful.
Yeah.
And they got it. I don't think a lot of these guys appreciate what the life they're living and everything that goes along with playing in the big leagues. That's the thing, the mentality.
Mm.
God, what a beautiful thing this is. People are making a fuss over me. I'm making all kinds of money, millions of dollars. But they look sad to me. A lot of these guys look sad.
As if they're working at a job instead of playing at a game?
Yes. Yeah. I play with guys like Al Kaline and Norm Cash. My God, it was fun. Fun guys. They were making money, but they were having fun playing the game. We all had fun. They would go out with the rookies, and everybody, it seemed like one big happy family.
Mm.
But I don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the Mets. I look at them, they're like, it's a strain. They're playing on the strain. And again, that's all that big money.
Mm-hmm.
Puts all the strain on these young fellas. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Baseball's supposed to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, was always fun. Just going in the locker room with the guys, being on an airplane with the guys, playing a card game with the guys, and the game. It was all, to me, that was the beauty of baseball.
The game.
Not how much money I was making.
The fun.
And today, everything seems to be money. Not in baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's ridiculous, where a guy like Mo Vaughn gets $17 million and the guy's out of shape, he can't even play. And you see that, you know, what interest have you got in it? What the hell are they doing? I don't know what they're doing. And I don't really care what they're doing. Okay? I'm interested in my little restaurant.
Do you have an all-star team, either today's players or the players you were growing up with idolizing, or your own peers?
Oh, a heck of an all-star, great, great team.
Yeah, can you?
Oh, sure. First guy I would start with would be Willie Mays in center field.
Mm-hmm.
My second baseman would be Jackie Robinson.
Over
Joe Morgan,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought Joe Morgan was a heck of a player. And the outfield would be Ted Williams in left field. I would put DiMaggio in right field.
And
Willie Mays in
center.
And I would put Stan Musial on first base. Now,
Robinson on second.
The shortstop,
I would have to say it would be the guy from St. Louis, Smith. The guy Smith.
Ozzie Smith.
Ozzie Smith. Mm-hmm. And the third baseman, I think, with all the great third basemen I've seen, like Brooks Robinson, and I think I would go along with Mike Schmidt.
Mm-hmm.
And then my catcher would be Campanella, mm-hmm, and Johnny Bench.
Okay.
And Yogi Berra is the third catcher.
Okay.
Yeah, three good, tremendous catches.
And how about when we the pitching.
The pitches, I would start immediately with Koufax. And then I would have Allie Reynolds for my right-hand pitcher.
Why Allie Reynolds?
He was so
underrated?
Oh, was he rough? Was he tough? And I think I would have Gibson on my pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Warren Spahn,
mm-hmm,
Carlton, Seaver. Oh, I would have a good.
It's unbeatable. Yeah. I don't want to play your team.
And then I would put Nolan Ryan in there with Roger Clemens. And then out of the bullpen, I think I would like Eckersley.
Yeah.
And hi. Eckersley and I tell you, there's a young pitcher pitching today that I really love. Kid for Houston, Billy Wagner.
Yeah.
Left-hand relief pitcher. Oh, he's my kind of pitcher.
Yeah.
I like the...
Why is that? You like the finesse, control?
I love the way he throws the ball.
Mm.
And he's got a tremendous, tremendous fastball.
Yeah.
And he brings it to you. He's looking for spots. He's just a good.
He'll challenge you. You like the challenge.
I like that. That I like very much. I probably left out 1,000 other great players. That would be the beginning of my great team.
This is a wonderful hour, though, that you've given us on behalf of the Society for American Baseball Research.
I'm not going to give any more, because we've got to start making some good jobs.
Yes, and I'm going to take an overview of the restaurant. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure, too. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Lee.
It's a tape to go up to the Hall of Fame.
Yes, it's in it.
I have a little.